But first, a little grab of poetry. When a dog is chasing you, be warned that dog has rabies. When a man is chasing you, be warned that man has syphilis. Blunt words, dear listener. And they're the kind of words that have cost one of our next guests her homeland. Now, last year, Taslim Nazreen allegedly made comments in an Indian magazine, The Statesman, that were critical of the Quran, setting off a wave of protests against her, a tidal wave. Religious leaders in Bangladesh bayed for her blood and indeed for her hanging. At 32, Taslim was a doctor, writer, women's rights activist, and she's currently living in exile in Berlin, where she's writing another book, and she joins us tonight. But we thought we'd broaden the discussion to find out just how feminism is faring in the Muslim world in general, and also, indeed, within the Muslim community in Australia. And to help us in that pursuit, we're joined in our London studios by the distinguished journalist Yasmin Alibi Brown. Yasmin, of course, has been on the program often. She has a long history of writing about the plight of women in Islamic countries. And in Perth, by Dr. Samina Yasmin, a lecturer in international relations at the University of Western Australia. Let's go to Berlin first. Haslima, are you there?
Yes.
Now, freedom of speech, of course, is an immense issue for you. Would you tell us about the not one but two fatwas decreed against you? I hear there was a very fetching poster going around Dhaka at the time with a photo of you framed by a noose.
Yes, two fatwas declared on me that was declared on my head.
Now, you believe that there's simply no compromise available between you and the clerics and that your life will always be in danger?
Yes, my life is in danger. At any time, fundamentalists could kill me.
We haven't been able to read your book here, the book Shame. Why did it upset people so much?
Actually, not for book Shame. Fundamentalists started demanding of my death from 1990, when I started to write column in newspaper that women should get total freedom and religion and patriarchy is against women. If women want freedom, they should cross the barrier of religion and patriarchy. Then fundamentalists started campaign against me. But for shame, I think that how religious minority community are oppressed by Muslim fundamentalists, how they destroyed Hindus' temples, how they kidnap Hindu women, how they raped. I describe all this situation after the demolition of Babri Mosque in December 1992. So government and fundamentalists wanted to hide all the facts, but I described that, so they became very angry against me, so they put price on my head.
Yasmin, it seems to me that Taslima is guilty of enormous courage and recklessness here, and of course demonstrates that the rising tide of religious demagoguery must be the most pressing issue facing women in Islamic countries. But are there other problems for women?
Yes, I mean, my heart goes out to Taslima Nasreen. I've written about her and I've thought a lot about her over the past 12 months, and I have no idea what it must feel like to lose your country, your people, and to be forever on the run. So I really do feel for her. And I also feel for the Muslim communities around the world who are in part responsible for creating these martyrs like the Taslima Nasreen and Salman Rushdie. But having said that, what I feel living in the West, and I'm not a practicing Muslim, that increasingly I'm forced in various directions, we're very uncomfortable. I want a lot to change within the Muslim community, especially the lives and rights of women in the West. At the same time, I know that at the moment, Islam and Muslim people are the new enemy of the West, and we are constantly demonized, and the kind of dreadful racism against Muslims is something that I find very frightening, especially after watching Bosnia. So in part, I want to protect the community. In part, I'm very angry with the community, and I really don't know how to deal with that at the moment.
Well, Yasmin, I think you deal with it in a very measured and balanced way. I've just been reading a report of yours on how poetry is becoming a weapon in the fight for the rights of Pakistani women. But you begin by telling an extraordinary story about a woman, Sabina, who was raped at her home in a village near Lahore. Would you just tell the listener that story? Because I think it illustrates an immense, well, clearly the immensity of the problem.
Yes, it was, I mean, this young woman wrote to me because I'd written previously about how angry I felt about this vendetta against illegal immigrants in this country, and I'd said that, you know, many illegal immigrants are people who are real victims and the authorities here don't want to listen to their voices. And this woman wrote to me in Hindi, and I agreed to meet her, and I went to see her. She was a very young, very beautiful woman, who wept and wept and told me her story about how she was raped by her uncle, her mother's brother, who was a very respectable man in a village near Lahore. She passed out because the rape went on for a long time. He was a father of four, her cousins they were. Her father found her and believed her story and was taking her to the elders of the village to complain, when the man, her uncle, said that he was going to accuse her of adultery, because there is an ordinance that was passed in Pakistan during the Zia regime, which Benazir Bhutto, and here is a woman prime minister, has never properly revoked. So he threatened to use this ordinance, which says that if you're raped or if you commit adultery, you need four Muslim men of good repute to bear witness to this scene. Now, you know, it's absurd.
Impossible.
How do you
impossible.
Get... Impossible.
Yeah. Mm.
And that if you couldn't, then rape was adultery. And the punishment was stoning and death. So he threatened to use this ordinance, which, although it doesn't have real legal basis in the urban areas, in villages, is increasingly used by these little
The sad
courts.
Thing as well was that the child's mother, the girl's mother, also seemed to be so angry with her for being beautiful, for being pale of skin.
Yes, and this is where it all becomes very difficult, because in Muslim communities, women collude in the oppression of other women, and older women who have been through it all themselves. Her mother was horrific towards her daughter, wished her dead, kept muttering to me in Urdu, saying, you know, the only thing she wanted now was for this fair-skinned, beautiful child to die so she could go back home, because she had ruined the life of her only brother. And here was this girl living as an illegal immigrant. The day she's found out, she's going to be deported. The authorities will not hear her story. I can't do anything about it, because I cannot reveal where she lives, because this is what would happen to her, caught in this terrible dilemma.
Well, she too has
and
lost
really
her country,
to die.
Hasn't she?
Yes, and she wants to die. Mm. I mean, this is as simple as that. She said it's better to die than to be a young woman in Pakistan today.
Well, Taslima, of course, describes men as insects and rapists, but when you hear a story like that, you have some sympathy for her prose style. Now, Yasmin, there are, of course, a number of problems facing women in Islamic countries. What are some of the others, before I go to Samina for the Australian experience?
Well, I mean, the other side of the story is, and I think I'd really like to say that, because one of the things that happens inevitably is that only one side of the story gets seen. Many Muslim women have wonderful lives, very enriched lives, and are very proud to be Muslim. Don't actually want to be westernized, because they feel there's enough value in some of their religion and traditions which adds depth to their lives, and they get very irritated both by Western feminists who see them as victims and by the men in their community who want to put them back in a box. So I want to say that very clearly. I'm not suggesting all Muslim women are victims. They're not. We're not. The other problems, though, that feed into this whole oppression in the West is, because the laws are so weighted against immigrants and immigrants of colour, and increasingly against Islamic people, it's very difficult to make changes within the community which are needed.
Because the community feels beleaguered, I guess, does it?
Yes, and they think there's an enemy out there, so we should stick together. That was one of the effects of the satanic verses. And I don't know if this is beginning to happen in Taslima's case in Bangladesh, but I talked to quite a lot of feminist Bangladeshi women living here after the Taslima story erupted, and they felt very confused, because On the one hand, Bangladeshi people here are the victims of terrible violence on the streets. On the other hand, there are lots of things to be changed there.
Yes, but I want to go back to Berlin, to Taslima, and then we'll go to Samina in Australia. Taslima, do you think that sometimes your work has been counterproductive, may have forced some of the community to close ranks in the way Yasmin is describing?
I don't think so, because many women read my books and they told me that they are waking up and they get encouraged to fight against fundamentalists, to fight against all the system, religious system, patriarchy. And my books are bestseller, and there are lots of people read my books, but I have lots of enemy also who are patronizing patriarchy, who think that by religious system women freedom is possible. They are against me, but always I said that it is not never possible, that religion never give any freedom to women. So, but many women, especially educated women, working class women, they like my writing. And I want to say one thing that that Pakistani woman said. I respect her, of course, and I said that it is a conflict between two different ideas, the idea of secularism and of fundamentalism. It is not a conflict between Christianity and Islam, mm-hmm. simply because there are fundamentalists in every religious community. Actually, it is not a conflict between East and West. To me, this conflict is between irrational blind faith and modern rational, logical mind. This is a conflict between modernity and anti-modernism, future and past, tradition and modernity. So I don't think it is a fight between East and West, Muslim, Islam and Western countries.
Let's talk to Samina now in Australia. The thing that surprises many of us, Samina, is how many of the countries we're dealing with have women political leaders, Sri Lanka, Bangladesh, Pakistan, Turkey. Do women in all of these countries have the vote, incidentally?
From what I understand, yes. But is your question going to be, how come these women are
you have to ask it, don't you, Samina? It may be unfair, but it's hard not to pose that question.
Why is it that you find women leaders in these countries and not women freedom? I guess you really have to go back to the fact that there are a whole lot of factors which probably Yasmin started pointing out. But the beginning is illiteracy in these communities. Women, not just simply in these countries, but even in other countries with Islamic population, normally are the last ones to be considered eligible for education, not so much by the government, but by the society in which they live in. Once they grow up, the fact that they need jobs or the fact that they even want jobs is not always considered important for them. Because of that, they don't have representation in the political system. But because they participate in an elite system, women who come from the elite find it a lot easier to cross the barriers that normal women can't or ordinary women can't do that. And that's where really, because of elite politics, you find women leaders in these countries, but not women independence.
Samina, let's look at Australia. How are Muslim feminists faring here? I suppose it's a profoundly different experience.
It is different. I think Muslim Islamic feminists in Australia, there are a few of them, but the ones who are there, they suffer from two major problems. One is their recognition by the Muslim community itself. And it's not so much Muslim women in the community, but mostly Muslim men. When a lot of men would find it very threatening, other Muslim women talking about independence or talking about their rights. But the second problem, which I find very obvious, is that Muslim feminists in Australia face a problem from other community. I mean, the non-Muslim communities find it very hard to understand that you could have feminists among Muslims. So for actually to convince them is a major problem then, convincing women in Islamic community itself that you can have a phenomenon like Islamic feminist. Does that answer your question?
I think it goes a long way to so doing, Samina. Let's go back to Yasmin. Yasmin, what about the growth of the middle class? Surely that must affect the progress of feminism in Islamic countries.
Yeah, yes and no. I mean, we only have to look at Saudi Arabia to see how very wealthy you wouldn't call them middle class, you'd call them, I don't know what class, of women don't have any free rights of, you know, free independent decision-making rights at all. So sometimes class can work. In many of the richest so-called progressive countries, Islamic countries, it actually has not worked. In fact, it's quite interesting. The more money there seems to be in countries like Saudi Arabia, the more Western goods there seem to be, the more oppressed the women become, because the fear of pollution is exaggerated by the same men who will drink a bottle of whiskey happily and read and watch porn movies themselves. Then they become desperate to protect their women from this Western pollution. So there, it's a very contradictory picture. But
what about in Britain, Yasmin? What's the dynamics of it there?
In Britain, we have a very interesting growth of professional middle class, not the elite that Samina has just spoken about, which I think is very well pointed out, not, you know, dynastic privileged women, but women who are now entering the professions, women who are Muslims, who want to be seen as Muslims, some who wear the hijab, the headscarf, but who are independent, economically independent, and becoming a voice in the debates. And this is very encouraging, especially younger women. There are some very interesting groups in Britain now of middle-class, highly educated Muslim women who are trying to create an Islamic feminism which makes sense to them and their children. And that's good news. But the majority of Muslim women, especially Bangladeshi women in this country, have no access to education, to any opportunities. And until that happens, the debates can barely begin.
Well, meanwhile, back in Bangladesh, Taslima, I understand that there's a boom in feminism and that there are hundreds of Nazarenes around the country. In other words, young women who are modelling themselves on you. Are you proud of that?
I think that it is, if anybody get encouraged to continue their fight or to be a rebel by reading my books, I think it is my achievement. And maybe I will not see any progress in society, but new generation will fight against all the systems and they will get freedom. Women will get education, women will get economic freedom. I'm proud of that.
Samina, we tend to, you know, to think of the Muslim community in Australia as monolithic, which of course it isn't, and there's a wide cross-section of cultures here. Does that produce additional conflict on women's issues, or does it actually help the process of improvement for women?
I think I don't know exactly how to answer that. I know there are different communities, and all of them have two levels of identity, one of their Islamic identity and the second one of their ethnic identity. It depends really on what kind of community we're talking about. Those communities that have been in Australia for, say, more than 20 years, you would find there's a willingness to integrate into the Australian system, and what they mean by feminism and Islamic feminism or their rights as Muslim women seems to be different from communities who have immigrated to Australia recently, especially after the Gulf conflict, and how they settle into Australia and how they identify their role as women and as Muslim women in the system. I guess what I do find, based on our research on Muslim women in Perth, is that most of these women suffer from one problem, and that is the images that general Australians have about Muslim women. A lot of them do not wear hijab. A lot of them do have education. A lot of them do want to get jobs. And what they find is that this image of what a Muslim woman is all about always comes in their way, not just simply from their own families, but from outside, and which does compound their problems.
Yasmin, you've written about how poetry is being used by Pakistani women to inspire the women's movement and influence the culture, a verse-led revolution.
Yes, and that's been wonderful to discover. I didn't know about this until quite recently, and what's very interesting is a lot of Muslim women here draw their inspiration from these fighters, and many of them are middle-class Pakistani women, who some of whom are journalists and lawyers, but many of whom are using poetry. Poetry in Pakistan and in India generally is a very regular activity. It's practiced, read, written by ordinary people, except Of course, ordinary people usually meant men who had the time and the leisure to do all these things. And there were at the time, you know, love poems and all kind of over-idealistic stuff. Nowadays, the women are using that form of poetry to write very subversive and wonderful
poems. But Yasmin, how is it getting out? Is it being performed, read, published?
Yes, they read it to each other.
Right.
Some of it is published, but the way this poetry is disseminated is you meet in people's homes, you have your tea, and you have make an evening of it.
I take it it's not quite as aggressive as Taslima's poems, you know, when a dog is chasing you, be warned. Do they go as far as Taslima?
One or two of them are explicitly sexual and an affirmation of women's sexual needs. Quite wonderful poems. Others are more political. I think the interesting thing is they are actually political. And they're talking about censorship, they're talking about women's rights, they're talking about how they're not going to let Pakistan slide back into a period of the dark days under Zia. And they are also very good poems.
Mm. Taslima, sometimes it seems that your poems go too far, even for feminist colleagues, that you're often described as vulgar and pornographic. You're criticised, of course, for chain-smoking and being much married. Does it trouble you that you're heavily criticised by grassroots women's organisations? For instance, for criticising the Quran?
Yes, I think that who criticise my poems, actually they are taught by centuries that it is fate or destiny of women that to be slave of men. So they cannot think that women can be treated as a human being. Women should have all right what man has. So when men write pornography or about sexual thing in their poetry, in their prose, they do not criticize man because they think that it is man's duty or it is man can write sexual thing, but women should not write.
Yes, there's an old saying in the Christian world, why should the devil have the best tunes? And I have to ask you this, Taslima. You're a role model for many women. Who was your role model? Where on earth could you find someone to model yourself on when you're so audacious?
No, actually, when I started writing about women issue, my prose, my poem, I never learned women Western feminism. I never read any books. So it came from myself. I thought that why there is a discrimination, oppression against women, why there is no equality. I thought that women is human beings, so why women are not treated as human beings. So I felt a responsibility to fight against inequality and injustice against women, just in my way, from my experience and...
No, I think that's fair comment. I don't know if you feel like commenting on Taslima's work, Yasmin. Do you? Do you have a view about it, her poetry and her writing?
I've only read two or three poems in translation, and I've read Shame. And I mean, one of the things that I felt then, and I still feel, that it's very raw, real stuff. You know, it hasn't been taught by anybody. Like Taslima said, it comes from within her. And that's very moving and very striking. I do, however, feel, because of the tensions that we live with in the West, I feel there are ways of communicating with men as well. I mean, unless men actually change, nothing's going to happen. We're in a phase in feminism generally where we're not... I don't hate men. I actually love men very much. I want to get on with them. I want them to change.
I think we're a disgusting gender. I think you should hate us.
No, I don't think that. I really don't think that anymore. But we have to find a way of both being assertive and not being so extreme in what we feel about men that they won't listen, which may seem a very kind of placatory way of looking at them. Maybe I'm in my mid-40s, I'm getting old. I don't think anything has worked so far, a confrontation of that kind. So I do feel, particularly in communities like the one Taslima lives in, or I know the Bangladeshi community here better, many of the people who supported her, I want her to know this, one of the women who was an editor of the magazine in which Taslima's poems were written, was very upset when I talked to her about Taslima, because she didn't want Taslima to die or to have this death threat, but she equally felt she went too far. Now, I'm only quoting what she told me, and I wrote this in my article, but I wonder if Taslima would take that view seriously.
Well, let's ask Taslima, would you?
Yes, I think that many people told me that you were too radical, you go so far, and you were going that 100 years ahead. I don't think that I'm going so far or I'm too radical. But if I am too radical, maybe I'm too radical, and I think that total freedom of women, so I write like that. So, but if I am too radical, so I think that it is my I should have right to be too radical, but nobody should have right to kill me for that reason.
Hear, hear, and so say all of us to that one, Taslima. Yes. Samina, I want guidance from you. The issue that comes up again and again in this country in relation to the Islamic community is that of female circumcision. Now, what should we do? Should we butt out of this debate? Should we leave it alone and leave it to the communities to sort out? Or is it right and proper for the non-Islamic community to have a view about this?
Well, to begin with, the whole issue of female circumcision really is not an Islamic issue. In fact,
I know it isn't technically, Samina, but it does cross over enormously, doesn't it?
Yeah, but I think it depends on the communities you're talking about. Maybe some African communities and some Southeast Asian communities, but the majority of Islamic countries have not had a tradition of female circumcision. And interestingly, because of the project that we had been involved with, it was very obvious that some women did refer to this issue, but what they did say was that, look, we do not know exactly where do we stand in this whole process. I guess it's a problem both for those communities, and I would still stick to the argument that it is not an Islamic tradition, but the communities who are Muslim and who follow these practices, they have got as much confusion to deal with as rest of the Australian community.
I think that's right, Samina. I get some heartbreaking letters from women on the issue, on both sides of the argument, and I've never really known where to stand on it. I know it's a side issue tonight. Taslima, will you return to Bangladesh?
Yes, I want to return in Bangladesh, but now it is not possible. But when I will be able to return in Bangladesh, I do not know.
You've got another court case coming up, have you not?
Yes, and I think the court case is a fight between me and government. It is somehow by law system. But the fight between me and fundamentalists, there is no law. They just want to kill me. The problem is there. So if government give me proper security, and if government dismiss that case, and if government take action against those fundamentalists who gave fatwa on me, I think then it will be possible for me to go back to my country.
Taslima Nazreen, Yasmin Alibi Brown, and Samina Yasmin, I thank you very much for your time and trouble.